Thank you, Alice. No takers for the karaoke. All right. So now I'd started my EIS fellowship about July of last year, and the very first month was summer course didactic month. And so right after that, on August 1st, was the first day that I was supposed to go to my center and start work. And I was fortunate enough to be on a plane going to West Virginia to help out with the EpiAid. They're doing a CASPER there for the 2016 flood. And, you know, at that time, I had a three-year-old at home, and he knew that mommy had to go away for a little while to help people who were in a flood. And, you know, when I got to my hotel room, from the comfort of my hotel room, I started a video chat with him, and he looked really perplexed, and I said, "Well, what's wrong, baby?" And he says, "Well, where's the flood?" And I thought, oh my gosh, well, how obvious. And so I actually, after we were finished with our questionnaires for our CASPER, I actually had the local team member take me to a waterfall, and I was able to take, and this is not going to be easy to see, but this is a picture that I was able to take for my son to prove that I was somewhere around high water, even if it was just a waterfall and not the actual flood. So in truth, though, literally, I have not been in a flood. I've been fortunate enough in my lifetime not to have been in a flood or any kind of disaster setting. Have any of you here experienced that? Yeah. So as you might know, then, people who have suffer not only from the immediate physical effects after a flood or a disaster, but they have often long-term sequelae that are behavioral health related. And, you know, I don't know if you guys have experienced this, but there are people that we saw who definitely lost their loved ones right in front of their eyes, and they lost their livelihoods and their homes and their memories, actually, and they had to readjust to a new way of life. And one of the things that I thought was pretty astounding about the West Virginia flood CASPER was that there were some people who hadn't, this was not their first rodeo. Like, there were some people who had already been in a flood in West Virginia, were relocated to higher ground, and then yet again, unfortunately, experienced another flooding disaster. So these people, as you can imagine, were very devastated. And as you can see, I feel very strongly about this topic and have chosen to work with some of my colleagues, many of who are in this room, to further explore behavioral health impacts after the 2016 West Virginia flood. So I'll start with just by talking a little bit about the flooding event. On June 23rd, severe thunderstorms throughout the state of West Virginia dropped 25 centimeters or 9.8 inches of rain in just 12 hours, causing extensive flash flooding to many cities and towns. 23 lives were lost, and more than 1,000 homes and businesses were destroyed, with an estimated 3,500 persons displaced due to flood damage. Immediately, a state of emergency was declared in 44 of West Virginia's 55 counties. Initially, FEMA declared 10 of these counties as a federal disaster area, and two more counties were added later. Several weeks after the flooding event, after emergency response efforts had been conducted, the status of the areas was still not fully known. On July 18th, the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources, Bureau for Public Health, also known as BPH, requested assistance from CDC's National Center for Environmental Health in the form of an EpiAid to conduct a community assessment for public health emergency response, or CASPER, in two communities severely affected by the flooding, Clendenin and Reno. I'll now discuss the objectives. To be clear, there are two manuscripts coming out of this. One is going to focus on the CASPER in general, and the other is going to focus on the behavioral health impact of this CASPER. So the general manuscript has the objectives that you see here, and the one that I'm going to be talking about this presentation will specifically focus on the behavioral health questions from the CASPER questionnaire and has the objectives of obtaining household level data to describe post-flooding behavioral health symptoms, the relationship between increased behavioral health symptoms and worsening health conditions, and provide behavioral health recommendations to the Bureau of Public Health decision makers to improve response and recovery efforts. And now I'm going to talk about the CASPER methodology. And of course, we're in a CASPER session, so we're going to hear this kind of ad nauseum, but I'm just going to go through it again. So we used a two-stage probability sample method to select a representative sample of households for each CASPER. The first stage of sampling design involved using the U.S. Census data to select 30 clusters within Clendenin and 30 clusters within Reynell for a total of 60 clusters. They were selected with a probability proportional to size. For the second stage of sampling design, within each of these 60 clusters, the interview team selected 7 households for interview by systematic random sampling. So every nth household is selected where n equals the number of households divided by 7. The clusters that were selected twice actually had 14 households sampled. So the target sample size for each CASPER is 30 clusters times 7 households, or 210 households for Clendenin and 210 households for Reynell. We predefined the area of interest as the area covered by specific zip codes in the towns of Clendenin and Reynell. The population center in Clendenin is outlined in black, and the census block clusters are outlined in pink. We have a total of 27 different clusters representing 2,569 households in the assessment area, with 3 clusters that were sampled twice. The population center of Reynell is outlined in black, and again, the census block clusters are outlined in pink. 26 clusters representing 1,923 households in the assessment area were sampled, with 4 clusters that were sampled twice. A questionnaire was developed using questions from previous flood-related CASPERs and the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, or BRFSS, questions. There are 35 questions total, and they were divided into sections about evacuation and preparedness, displacement, health impact, communication methods, and recovery status. Data was collected on August 1st and 2nd. A total of 35 teams of local health department staff and community volunteers participated on day 1, and 34 teams participated on day 2. A total number of 392 interviews were completed within the pre-selected clusters. Interview training was provided for 70 public health professionals and student volunteers. Interviewer teams typically consisted of 2 people, and 19 teams were sent to Clendenin and 16 teams were sent to Reynell. The training emphasized a standard verbal delivery method for questions and appropriate response recording to reduce bias and data entry errors. Communication and navigation equipment, including satellite imagery cluster maps, were provided, and safety training was also provided. Interviewers were instructed to obtain verbal consent from an adult household resident. They could make referrals for urgent needs and provide disaster resource information packages. Data from the questionnaires were analyzed in EpiInfo 7.2. Sample frequency data were weighted to report estimated numbers of households in the assessment area. The formula used for the household level data weighting accounted for the probability that the household was selected from the cluster. 95% upper and lower confidence intervals were calculated. I'll now move on to the results and discussion. Before getting into the detailed results, here are the response rates. The completion, cooperation, and contact rates were comparable in the 2 communities, with the contact rate in Reynell just being slightly higher at 50.3% compared to Clendenin's 46.2%. So one set of questions we asked respondents was based on a BRFSS question. We asked how many days in the past 30 days has the respondent's individual physical health was not good, and how many days his or her mental status was also not good. We asked how many days poor physical or mental health kept the respondent from doing their usual activities. Many households in both communities reported worsened mental health. Compared to the 2012 West Virginia BRFSS estimates, households in Clendenin and Reynell reported more days of not good physical and mental health over the past 30 days. Mental health, as you can see, particularly was more pronounced in its negative health impact after the flood. Since this CASPER was performed 5 weeks after the flooding event, activities were returning to more normal, or a new normal was being defined, so that might have possibly accounted for the smaller number of days of interruption of normal activities after the flood compared to the BRFSS data. Another question asked the respondents if anyone in the household had experienced certain behavioral health symptoms after the flood, including anxiety or stress, depressed mood, problems sleeping, emotional outbursts, trouble concentrating, decreased appetite, or aggressiveness. Data showed that many households in both communities frequently reported increased behavioral health symptoms such as anxiety and depressed mood since the flood. 60% of the households in Clendenin and 53% of the households in Raynell reported at least one of the behavioral health symptoms seen in this graph. Another question asked if anyone in the household had received behavioral health services since the flood, for example, from a counselor, pastor, or clergy member, therapist, or social worker. As you'll recall, even though about half of the households reported increased behavioral health symptoms, only about 10% of the households of both communities actually received behavioral health services. Roughly another 10% did not receive services but reported that they needed help. And what's even more notable is that about 80% of the households reported not receiving and not needing behavioral health services. This suggests either that the communities have robust behavioral health resiliency or that there is a poor awareness of the benefits or, you know, a stigma associated with receiving behavioral health resources, as is pretty common. Another question focused on the household-level reasons for difficulty seeking behavioral health services after the flood. These difficulties included that it was too expensive, that there was no transportation, people were not aware of resources, there was a lack of trust in the system or the providers, people might have been disabled or homebound, they did not have health insurance, or they were simply worried about what others might think. As we discussed, the vast majority of households in both communities either reported not needing behavioral health services or not having any difficulties accessing behavioral health services. About 80% reported no need, and roughly 15% reported not having difficulty finding services. The remaining percentage of people who expressed specific barriers to obtaining behavioral health services are shown here. In Raynell, barriers to behavioral health service access included not being aware of the resources, lack of trust in the system, being worried about public perception, and not having transportation. In Clendenin, barriers to behavioral health service access included financial issues, not having transportation, not being aware of resources, and lack of trust in the system. This question here focused on the increased use of substances since the flood, including tobacco, alcohol, marijuana, prescription and over-counter drugs, and other illicit drugs. Substance abuse is often associated with worsening behavioral health symptoms. This graph illustrates that most households in both communities reported an increased use of tobacco products compared to other substances like alcohol or drug use. You'll note that either none of these interviewed houses used illicit drugs, or more likely, they just didn't want to admit that to feds, which I can't blame them for. This question asked about exacerbations of chronic health conditions since the flood, including asthma/COPD, hypertension, diabetes, heart disease, and physical disability. Along with the increased tobacco use, households in both communities had similar percentages of exacerbations of chronic health conditions like hypertension and COPD or asthma. Although the percentages of households with increased tobacco use, worsened hypertension, and worsened COPD or asthma were similar, as seen in the previous slide, when associating the worsened health conditions with increased behavioral symptoms, differences were more pronounced. For example, the likelihood of worsening hypertension was about fourfold in both communities. The likelihood of worsening respiratory disease was threefold in Clendenin, but double at sixfold in Raynell. The likelihood of increased tobacco use was sixfold in Clendenin and a staggering 17-fold in Raynell. In conclusion, worsened health conditions were associated with behavioral health symptoms among household members post-flooding. A greater proportion of households reported increased behavioral health symptoms than reported need or receipt of professional help. And finally, many households reported professional behavioral help was needed but not received. Some of the things that the Bureau of Public Health could consider as next steps are offering provider education to medical and behavioral health disaster response teams and primary care providers about the associations between post-disaster mental health, mental and physical health impacts. They could also conduct further studies to determine if a causal relationship exists between increased behavioral health symptoms and worsened health conditions. Additionally, they could identify reasons for the gap between perceived symptoms increase and the need for help. And finally, they could further investigate barriers to available behavioral health screening and services. The limitations of this study included the following. Severely affected households likely were underrepresented, as both selection favored households present at the time of survey and severely damaged homes appeared abandoned. Self-assessment of household member health conditions and behavioral symptoms were not clinically confirmed. They were estimates that represented household level data. And there was likely selection bias of household member interviews. Household level relative risks do not extrapolate to individual relative risks. And finally, temporal associations were not established in this cross-sectional study. I'd like to acknowledge the following persons and their contributions. Thank you for your time and attention.